Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Wednesday, March 18th, welcome, 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 friends, on Into the Program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman. Aaron, today on the show, we're talking about retirement.
Yes.
We'll talk about some tips for how to retire. We'll talk about me not flapping my clipboard around too much. We'll also talk about how retirement has evolved over the generations, whether this is a good or a bad time to retire. You know, retirement as a concept, Cherry, has really not been around all that long. No. It's an invention of like the late 19th century. And so there aren't a whole lot of generations in humanity's history who have gone through this concept of retirement. So it's still in some ways in its infancy. So we have two great experts today to get you some retirement tips. And of course, we would love to hear from you. Do you have a plan for retirement? Do you think you'll be able to afford retirement? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. If you reside on YouTube or Facebook, put a comment in the chat.
Yeah, and if you're recently retired, how'd you do it?
Yes.
What'd you do? Were you planning for 30 years? Did you just say, you just pull the trigger? How'd you do it? 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org.
Victor, by the way, says, my 20-year-old son is much better prepared for retirement than many adults that I know. I credit financial literacy classes he had to take in high school.
All right.
Interesting comment from one of our
He's
regulars
already
there,
ready.
Victor. So this conversation, doesn't matter what your age is, you have a perspective on retirement, and we'd love to hear it.
Yeah, love to hear from them. And we have our trio of news stories.
Let's do it.
Yeah, Philadelphia International Airport just closed a third TSA checkpoint due to the ongoing partial government shutdown. Checkpoints at terminals A, West, and F were just shut down. Terminal C had already been closed. And if you didn't know, 50,000 TSA workers just missed their first full paycheck on Friday, which means some workers, they had to pick up second jobs to pay the bills. 300 TSA workers quit. Others have called out, and this has been causing checkpoint closures and long lines and delays at airports across the country. But before you freak out, there's good news for us here in Philadelphia. According to Fox 29, travelers have been bracing for these long waits, but they have been pleasantly surprised. The closed checkpoints have had minimal impact. Wait times were just 1 to 3 minutes with TSA pre-check this morning, 4 to 6 minutes if you were in the regular line, and that was today. So that's good news. But this weekend, we're expected to have a flux of travelers. So things could change. I mean, this is spring break season, and we have major events like the NCAA tournament games coming up, which could draw crowds into the city. So things could change. But right now, so far, so good.
Yeah. And we've talked about this before with shutdowns, but usually there has to be a pain point, a publicly felt pain point for things to shift on Capitol Hill. Maybe the security lines will be that pain point, but it doesn't sound like they are
now yet.
Staying a little bit in the world of politics now, story number two, maybe the biggest local primary race this spring is for Pennsylvania's 3rd Congressional District. It's an open seat right here in Philadelphia. That's big, not a lot of open seats. It's a heavily Democratic district with a very crowded Democratic primary. But that field is a little thinner this morning because Dr. David Oxman announced that he is suspending his candidacy and endorsing the other doctor in the race, Dr. Ayla Stanford. Oxman was always sort of an outsider in this race, but he did bring some money to it. He was also running a healthcare-focused campaign a little bit similar to Stanford, who rose to prominence during the COVID crisis. So now the major names left in the race are Dr. Stanford, State Senator Sharif Street, State Rep Chris Rabb, and State Rep Morgan Cephas.
Yeah, and the big shift, too, is now Stanford is the outsider. Everybody else is the political veterans. That's mean it's kind of like her against the establishment in some ways. Yet at the same time, she has a full-throated endorsement of outgoing Congressman Dwight Evans, which means she kind of has a
dynamic
inside.
Inside, outside.
Yeah, inside, outside. A lot of folks see State Senator Sharif Street, though, as the front runner. He ran the state party. He's the son of a former Philadelphia mayor. Chris Rabb has the progressives, you know.
Yep, that's his lane.
Yeah, he just got endorsed this week by civil rights attorney Ben Crump, who was in Philadelphia.
Didn't see that. Interesting.
Yeah, so he got that. And of course, Morgan Cephas has been scrappy. She's the youngest person in the race and has pushed a lot of bills supporting women, incarcerated women, pregnant women. So don't count her out. And there's a forum tonight at Enon Tabernacle Church where a lot of influential, you know, black voters will be. And they'll be making their pitch to them at that forum. So it's an interesting race. And you don't know how it's going to turn because
you never know.
You
these
never know.
Primaries.
Yeah. And it's,
you know, it's like 30% wins, you know, usually. So I find Stanford's candidacy very interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, I was going around looking for like an equivalent to her, someone who's in like the local congressional delegation. Mm-hmm. So Philly suburbs, who never held any sort of public office, never worked in government before serving in Congress, or was not in the military.
Yeah.
Because those are the two traditional springboards. Mm-hmm. And I was just doing quick research. I didn't go back through all of history, but I couldn't find many comps, right?
Yeah.
So it's a tough road. Mm-hmm. That said, she's got some name recognition and she's starting to get some endorsements. So maybe she'll be one of the rare ones to walk that road.
And the other thing, she has money because, you know, the healthcare workers have backed her. She's been able to prop up her own campaign with some of her own personal funds. And you can't, the fact is she has some street cred just because of all the work she did during the COVID pandemic. And that's how people first started hearing her name.
Yeah.
When she set up, you know, places where you could go get, you know, used her own money to give people, you know, the COVID shot or whatever. And so, you know, so there's a lot there. But again, she's new to politics. So we'll see if this translates.
And I'm really sort of bringing it up just to say, I think we overestimate how many outsiders win these types of races because the outsiders end up being very memorable.
Yeah.
So we think there's all these business people and political
outsiders. But it's not.
But in general, no. Like there just aren't that many examples of people who, again, don't have one of those two main springboards into office. So we'll see if she can pull it off.
Definitely a race worth watching. And
how about a race worth yelling about?
I know.
Maybe.
So if you're a little stressed out by the news, social media, and the cost of everything, and you just want to yell and holler, well, guess what, Philly? There's a club for that. Yes, in Downingtown, Pennsylvania, they have a primal screaming club, a place where you can join a bunch of strangers and just wail your little heart out. And these clubs are popping up in D.C., Chicago, Portland, all over. And here is some video taken by the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette from a sister club out there. Take a listen. I feel relieved just hearing that.
I feel that.
You feel that?
I
you know
feel
what
that.
I'm saying? The Downingtown Club launched back in October. They've been meeting weekly to scream on a bridge. Near Johnsontown Park and River Station.
And they got a specific bridge.
Yeah, they got
it?
A bridge. They all they scream into the water. OK. And screaming, according to experts, is a form of primal therapy. And while there's no scientific evidence that it's actually effective, one cannot ignore the fact that letting out some of that pent up aggression just feels really, really good. Really good.
The way you said that was a little alarming to me. Are you okay, bud?
I'm all right.
Just want to make
sure.
Like,
just, I could
let's
actually
check in here. Mental check in. You good?
I mean, you know, and I'm more of a chill person.
You're very chill. And now I'm wondering how much you're keeping inside.
You know, I just feel like I could see myself like at this bridge, like letting it all out. Yeah. I need my voice for work, though. But
right. I'm worried because you're going to join a scream club. Throw out your voice, then I have to do the show by myself, then I'm going to scream. This is a chain reaction of anguish just coming down the pike here.
And I got to shout out Laura Brzezinski of Philly Mag, because she tried it out. She said the entire process just took 10 minutes, and she wrote about it, saying afterwards she felt lighter and noticeably at ease. You just get to let all the BS go. And there's a lot of BS floating around right now.
There's a lot.
I want to let it
go.
Well,
why don't we just do it right now?
You want to scream?
Just move the mic back.
All right,
all right, here we go.
We're not going to blow Al's ears out.
All right, here we go.
All
right. 3, 2, 1.
Ah! Oh, my God.
How you feel?
I want to eat a Reese's peanut butter cup.
What?
I feel great.
Wait, that was it? Wait, that's your go-to for feeling good?
I feel good. Can I smoke a cigarette at work? I feel feels so good. No, and Debbie's saying no cigarettes. I'm sorry. That feels great.
Okay.
We're going to talk about retirement.
I was going to say that. I was going to say, honestly, I was going to say before I did it that that was going to do nothing for me. And I'm still going to say that. It did nothing for me. I'm sorry. But I'm ready to do the show. We're going to talk about retirement today on Studio 2. I would rather join a club, a scream club, where
only
you just
you
pretend like you're in the
work.
Painting the screaming. You just silently go like this.
Only Avi Wolfman Arendt can get me to scream at work on the mic. Wow.
Retirement. Are you screaming about it? Or are you calm?
Yeah.
We'd love to hear from you. 888-477-9499. Absolutely. Ooh. You know, honestly, just call us and scream on the phone. That would be pretty
loose.
Funny.
I feel loose.
Oh, don't do that? Okay. Oh, okay. Debbie's upset.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine is helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer.
Welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gray.
And I'm Avi Wolfman Aaron. We just got word that Becky from Barnegat Light called up and screamed at our producer. So maybe that's the last one. No more screaming.
No more screaming.
She lives at Barnegat Light, though, so you could just scream into the ocean.
I know.
Thank you, Becky, by the way. Anyways, back to our regularly scheduled programming. We ask, are you saving enough for retirement? Mm-hmm. Or are you among the many who are anxious about it?
A majority of Americans say they feel unprepared financially and regret not saving more sooner. And if you talk to younger generations, they wonder whether Social Security will even be viable when it's their turn.
The good news is that a roaring stock market in recent years has some people feeling very set, but the future is much less certain for many millions of Americans. So today, we'll get some tips for retirement planning, including what you can do to catch up, and we'll also unpack a bit of the history with a look at how changes in government and the private sector have brought us to this moment.
And we've got two great guests joining us. We have Michelle Singletary, a personal finance columnist for The Washington Post. Michelle, welcome back to Studio 2.
Thank you for having me back.
Yes, we also have Jamie Hopkins, CEO of Bryn Mawr Trust Advisors. He's also the co-author of the new book, Your Retirement Sketchbook, 125 Retirement Planning Lessons from Financial Experts. So great to have you, Jamie.
Thanks for having me on, everyone.
And of course, we want to hear from you, our listeners. Do you have a plan for retirement? Do you feel prepared or are you worried you won't have enough? And if you just retired, tell us how you did it. The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And for our streamers on YouTube or Facebook, you can put your comments in the chat.
Got some interesting comments coming in. We'll get to that in a second. But Jamie, I'm just curious, broadly speaking, when you look at the people who are at retirement age now or in retirement, how does their retirement look, feel different than maybe the retirement of their parents' generation?
That's a great question, Avi. And what you do see today is that retirement shifted onto the individual.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you go back 30 years is a better time frame. A lot of people had workplace pensions or strong state pensions. Social Security replaced a higher percentage of their pre-retirement income. So people lived off of a lot of what we'll say is secure lifetime income sources. Inflation right at that time was a little bit less than we saw recently, too. And so that challenge was a bit different. Now, I think the positive side, and I always want to lean into that because you can go into the retirement conversations and just be like, oh, everybody doesn't have enough saved.
Yeah.
Retirees are as happy as they've ever been. And so I'm always a little bit contrarian on the retirement crisis because to me, it's not a crisis if current retirees are happier than the general population, right? Retirees like retirement more than they liked working on average. Mm. That's a good thing. But right now, people are very concerned about, right, the wars going on in the world. They're very concerned about inflation. They're very concerned about where is this economy heading over the next couple of years because there's so much noise. And to turn off the constant feed from everything that's going on is really hard. Mm-hmm. And I think that anxiety level, though, is higher than I've really ever seen it.
Mm.
People feel very anxious. It's not that things are bad for them today, but they're very anxious about where the future is going.
Yeah, Kate from New Jersey says, tips for retirement, a cardboard box and lots of rice and beans. So that captures the mood a little bit.
Yeah. And Michelle, do you have something to add to this? Because, you know, as you get folks who are getting ready to off ramp, they're looking, because my parents retired a few years ago, but they do have the pension. They have things that we may not have when it's our turn to retire. So some of the differences you see as folks get ready to off ramp right now.
Yeah, well, I think it's important to acknowledge that there are two sets of retirees. We talk a lot about in our field, the sort of a K-shaped economy. So there are people who are doing really well. They may be very anxious, but they're doing okay. They have a pension, they have Social Security, they've got income from a workplace retirement plan. And then there's the other part of the country, Americans who don't have a pension, are not going to get a lot from Social Security and don't have much saved. And really, when you go back historically, not everybody had a pension. So, you know, people sort of say, oh, pensions are gone. But there was a large swath of American public who never had a pension. And a lot of them looked like me. A lot of them were, you know, minorities and women. And also, you know, when Social Security first started, lots of Black folks couldn't get it because they were blocked from getting Social Security. And so I think it's important to acknowledge that there are a lot of people who are going to suffer, who are not going to be prepared for retirement because either they didn't earn a lot, they earned less than what they were deserve to earn, and they're just not going to have that amount of money to have a secure retirement. And then you toss in the cost of health care. And many people are dealing with that. And so I am actually concerned about a lot of people who are not going to be able to retire the way they want comfortably. And those who do have money, they're worried about their children because then they're going to have to use some of their retirement income to help their adult children who can't afford to buy a home or can't afford childcare. Yeah. So,
and Michelle, I have a quick follow-up because I want to just get an understanding of, you mentioned this K-shaped economy. How big is the group of people who really don't have the savings versus the ones that have been saving because of 401ks or had they had access to other means of preparing for retirement? Like, give us an understanding of what those numbers look
like.
Yeah,
I would say probably 40-50%. I mean, it's sort of split, really. And so it's a huge number of people. And when Gallup looks at security retirement issues, what they find is that people who have not retired think that they're going to have more money or they're not going to necessarily need Social Security. And those who have retired, about, I think the last statistic was about almost 50%, most of their money for retirement comes from Social Security. Wow. So that's not, you know, that's not secure. Lots of people, you know, are having to go back to work once they finish the job that they might have been in for a long time because they have to make up what Social Security doesn't cover.
We're asking this hour, do you have a plan for retirement? Mm-hmm. Do you feel prepared? Are you worried you won't have enough? The email is studio2@whyy.org. The number is 888-477-9499. Let's hear from a caller. This is Peter from Medford, New Jersey on the line. Hey, Peter, how you doing? I'm curious for your thoughts on retirement.
Good, thank you. Yeah, thank you very much. you know, I retired about a year and 3 months ago, and I never had a plan. My plan, I think, all along was I'll just have to work until I'm 90 years old. So I spent plenty of time panicking about it. Luckily, I had a very good job with a good employer who offered a pension plan. Actually, they got rid of that pension plan probably 20 years ago, almost, and I was grandfathered in, so I had the option to either keep the pension plan or go with a self-directed investment kind of model. Luckily, I had a lot of people working around me in finance, because I'm not really that great with numbers, but that said, don't dare drop that pension plan, keep that. And so I did. So I'm in retirement now with a fairly decent pension and Social Security. And I feel like I'm making enough to get by. You know, I actually do work part time, but I'm enjoying my retirement very much.
Yeah.
So I guess without doing much planning, I mean, granted, planning is important, but I never really felt that I had the money to put away. It was all based on having a pension plan, which I do worry that not many companies offer that anymore.
Yeah. But, yeah. That's Peter. Thank you, Peter from Medford, New Jersey. Yeah.
Listening to that story, Jamie, I'm curious what it brings to mind for you. And, obviously Peter's open, like I didn't really plan.
Yeah.
But the sort of backstop there was the pension. And I guess that feels like maybe an important like generational difference where like, I don't want to say you could get away with not planning, but if you've got the pension plus Social Security, maybe you have got that backstop where if you didn't plan, maybe there's a soft landing there versus now it feels like there has to be more active planning. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you definitely need more active planning today. And it's not just that piece. Michelle brought up some of the challenge historically with Social Security. And I think it's right around 60% where the majority of your income will come from Social Security. For about a third of the country, it's their only source of income. Mm-hmm. So if you're in that group, it's actually, it's almost like Peter's, there's not a lot of planning to do. You're not making enough money to, you know, push a lot away.
Yeah.
You are really just going to have to make good Medicare, Social Security decisions, and maybe part-time work decisions. That's going to be your plan. That middle group of like 30% of the country, that's the group that really needs to do planning because they're going to have some savings.
And maybe, it's about maximizing.
Right, yeah. Maximizing your situation. So how long you work, how much you spend, where you live. One of my big concerns is, you know, especially right to Michelle's point, is we do have a K-shaped retirement too, right? There is a group of people that does not have enough saved, that's going to be in poverty. We saw the poverty senior numbers tick up last year after kind of a decade of improvement. But that did tick up. But if you dive into that further, it is minority groups and single individuals where it really spikes. It's not an across-the-board spike. Single individuals is the biggest concern one for me. Long-term care is incredibly expensive. Yeah. People don't have great plans for that. Most of that, 70% of long-term care is provided unpaid by family members. Mm. But if you're a single individual in retirement, your spouse is not going to be able to step in for that cost. So you are going to have to figure out a way to fund it, which can be hundreds of thousands of dollars a year later in retirement, which then all of your savings are gone. And those are the kind of the issues I worry about a lot. So think about those planning pieces if you're in that middle group.
Mm. Yeah. And Nolan Ross, 3084 on YouTube says, I feel bad for contracting gig workers who often lack traditional retirement benefits from employment, especially with inflation, healthcare, and housing eating into savings into today's economy. So I like what you were talking about there. There's a lot to think about, Jamie. And Michelle, when I think about sort of retirement right now, do people have any understanding of what they actually need? Because a lot of times you're living a survival, you're just worried about today. And especially the younger you are and every decade you get closer to it, you're like, oh, maybe I need to be thinking about it. But do people have a realistic understanding of how much they need or what they will need in retirement? And if so, what does that really look like? Because you don't even really know where to start.
Yeah. ING had this great, brilliant commercial where this guy was walking his dog and he had under his arm like $1 million board or something. And his neighbor was chopping his hedge. And he said to the guy, he says, is that what you need for retirement? He said, yeah, about $1 million. He said, and his board was a gazillion. Mm-hmm. And he said, a gazillion, really $1 gazillion? That's what you need? And he said, you don't really know what you need for retirement. He says, no, I really don't. So the answer to that question is most people have not, they don't know their numbers. Mm-hmm. Now, I say that because I don't want to come off as saying that bad people, you don't know your numbers. You are living your life, you're raising your children, maybe you're in the sandwich generation, you're Gen X, and you've got kids and childcare and your parents. And so, it's okay that you don't know now, but you do have to know because life is hard. And this stuff is hard.
Yeah.
However, if you don't know what you need, you may retire and not be prepared for it. Or maybe you're working so long that you actually have enough and you could retire.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people, and that I would count me in that category. You're just like, and you're doing quite well. So it is important if you're listening to know your number. And the number is going to be different for everybody. All the advice does not apply to you. Wait till 70 to 62. You got to look at your life. If you're 62 and you're not in good health and you're struggling, then go ahead and take Social Security.
Yeah.
If you are working still and you're doing well and your health is okay and you've got a 401k and you got a pension and Social Security, well, then you can wait till 70 to collect Social Security. Security. So that's why it's important to know your own numbers and really crunch them. I know it's like you don't want to do it, but you have to. And that will help you decide what is best for you. And then you won't have all these little surprises. And I also want to say, if you are a gig worker, you know, the thing about workplace plans is that you can still save a retirement if you don't have a workplace plan. But the studies show that if you have a workplace plan, you're more likely to save because they set everything up for you, right?
Yeah, and some of them do the match.
That's right. And so there's lots of efforts to try to get, you know, get a sort of a federal intervention on that so people have access to the automatic feature of workplace plan, because that's what makes the difference. You can certainly do it on your own, but most people, you know, that stuff, I mean, even listen, y'all, it's hard for me, and I know all this stuff and I write about it, you know, and I spent a morning trying to go through paperwork and sign up for stuff. And in fact, my husband set up a rollover IRA and I was looking at it and I was like, I realized he didn't have a beneficiary filled out. I said, dude,
you get this done.
You got to ask him if it was purposeful.
Jamie's like, and you're nodding along to all of this, Jamie.
Yeah. I mean, it's 100% right that most people do have the structures, the IRAs, the rollovers, the Roth IRAs to save today in the gig economy, but it's not automatic for anybody.
Right.
And so you got to take affirmative steps.
It requires those steps, and it looks scary because everybody offers one. They're all trying to tell you how theirs is slightly better than the next one. They're fairly similar, but you know, the workplace ones have worked because we automatically enroll people, we auto escalate their savings, and then you match. And the matching's now become that part that's trying to make its way into like the Trump 401k policy that was announced, was for really gig workers to finally have a match if they're putting money away. That is the novel part of that. It's not opening up the ability to save, but it's a match. Right. Meaning you're putting money in and the government's going to match you $1,000 by saving. And that's good policy for the government because they don't want everybody to be on Medicaid one day. So they want people to have enough savings to live in retirement.
Well, obviously, it's important to plan, but they say the devil fools with the best laid plans. And a lot of people get thrown curveballs later in life. Here's one. Sarah says, I was saving well for retirement, maxing out my 401k contributions. Then I got laid off at 55. I was expecting another 10 years in this industry at this pay range. Now I haven't been able to find a new job and I might be retired. I feel like I'm screwed. Yeah. Let's bring in another caller on this topic of sort of late life or midlife curveballs. This is Susan from New Jersey on the line. Hey, Susan, you're on Studio 2. We'd love to hear your story.
Okay, it's a little complicated, but I'll try to keep it simple.
Yeah.
Okay, I've been married for 45 years, and our plan was that my 401 would be paying for taxes until at least we're 80, and his 401 would help us with extra fixing the house or whatever. We paid off our house, so our income only has to deal with utilities and taxes, which is really great. His current company pays for his car, his phone, and everything, so we don't have that expense. I paid cash for cars. So we're all good on that level. Okay, but we've decided that we want new relationships, so that usually means divorce.
Oh, goodness.
Well, if you divorce, okay, if I'm – okay, and I'm like the previous caller. I was let go from a $90,000 a year job. Now I'm just working as a receptionist, okay? So that was like I was planning to put money away, and that just got evaporated. So for the divorce, okay, you know, thinking out scenarios, in New Jersey, I mean, for one bedroom is $1,600 minimum, okay? And I'm only going to get $2,500 in my Social Security if we get that. $500 will go to Medicare, let's say. So that leaves me $2,000, and if $1,600 goes towards rent, I've got nothing. Yeah. I can't live on that. So the scenario we're tossing around with is becoming co-owners because we get along, thankfully, and that has to be the saving grace in all this.
Just ride it out, yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is, we can still do it on paper. We're still going to put the house into a trust, so that way that transfers, and we'll be the beneficiaries of that trust. So that's for medical or whatever. And also, the expenses here are like up at the most $2,000 a month, like with taxes and everything, if you put it all away.
Yeah.
So for me, if I were to live on my own, it would be $1,600. to live here, it's only 1,000.
Right, so, right. So much easier to cohabitate. Well, so Susan, thank you so much for that call, first of all. Really She's took us through the whole journey there. And it's clearly Susan is a planner. But, you know, sometimes these plans get knocked off course and then, you know, they're recalibrating. And that was an interesting solution. I'm just curious, Michelle, when you hear from people who've had some sort of shock to the system, it could be an illness, it could be they got fired, it could be the dissolution of a marriage. They have to take a plan and then replan. And it's almost like there's part of that is a financial calculation, but there's a mental calculation, emotional calculation there too. How do you go about navigating that when you're, you know, you're midstream and maybe you have to change course in some way?
Yeah, I wish I had a magic answer for her. I would be a little concerned about, you know, the whole cohabitation thing and where that's going to go. What if you gets a boo? And, you know, that's, I don't know. It's a lot of stuff going on there. I hope they all get in therapy, to be honest. So I would hope both of them have sat down with a fiduciary financial planner to really go over and have someone break that plan. What if this happens? Right. What if one of you find someone and you now want that other someone's like, I don't want you, I'm not living here with your old person.
Fair enough.
You know, we got to sell this house. So I think you need to find someone that will break the plan. And then what happens if the plan is broken?
Right.
And then that then move
game it out, essentially different scenarios. Exactly. That's interesting. Jamie, your thoughts on that about like having a plan and then, and it could be any life event, any life shock, and how you advise people to cope with that financially and emotionally.
So I think there was three really interesting things that's out of this whole conversation here. So one, thanks for Susan for sharing.
Yeah, thank you,
yeah,
Susan.
That was great.
Because that's a lot of personal and life and changes and, you know, trauma things at work and everything. And the first one is like the early retirement being forced out. If you look at the data, it's 45% of people end up retiring earlier than planned. About 45% retire when they planned and only 10% work longer. So what I always use that one for when we're talking to clients is you have to have an early retirement plan because it's just as likely to occur as it is you actually retire when you think you are going to retire. Yeah. So that's the first one is you have to plan for these unexpected events. That does not mean life is going to be the same. It also went back to what I brought up earlier, that concern about single individuals, because the costs are like 80-90%, but you don't have the income to support it anymore.
Right.
We are seeing more and more what we call silver divorce, but it just means like post-60 divorces occurring.
Yeah, yeah.
That was not common, you know, 40, 50 years ago. People just
stayed
stuck
together
it out.
Forever. Yeah.
And I will push on Michelle's point. I do worry about some of those pieces, so I do hope they're meeting with somebody, and there could be good reasons. But when you see that situation, and I'd say living together, one decision, I don't know if that's right or wrong, but putting the house in a trust, I work for a trust company, but at that asset level, that's going to create another restriction that if you decide to split up in the future, going to be super, super hard. So I usually talk to people about flexibility in your planning, because when these uncertain things happen, I have no idea what's going to happen to that house or that area or you two wanting to live together. But if that's an irrevocable trust, like you're kind of stuck now with that house, the ability to sell that, buy two smaller places, relocate to a less expensive area. We know New Jersey is not the world's cheapest place to live.
Absolutely.
And that is a real thing people should consider. Is it cheaper to move to Delaware, which you have lower state income taxes, lower property taxes, lower cost of living? From New Jersey. I know my wife's from South Jersey. She loves it. Yeah, but there are times where that is a real decision you need to consider. So the permanent aspect of planning, sometimes I think you need to, as Michelle said, like make sure you're stress testing that beforehand, because you can't get out of some
Don't
of those decisions.
Don't get too locked in maybe into one path just because it feels like the right path
right
then.
Now.
Yeah,
you got to plan for flexibility. I'm going to read a couple comments because we're about to go to a break. Ruth says, I believe all aspects of work life should be involved with retirement, the company, institution, the community, the government. That is the only way people who have worked their whole lives will be sure to have some level of security in the second most vulnerable time of life. Ada says, investing in a retirement plan is a passive way to accumulate assets. Most retirement plan providers offer simple, diversified investment solutions that allow you to set it and forget it. Know your retirement savings gap, though, and use a retirement calculator to estimate how much you need to save now to live comfortably at your desired retirement age.
We've got some great
questions. A lot
questions
of advice and here and comments.
Calls coming, we're going to get to that on the other side of this break and keep this conversation going.
Sure.
We're talking about retirement, and what we're asking you this hour is if you have a plan for retirement, and if you're anxious about retiring, or you feel like, you know, I'm in a good position, I'm saving for it, give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org, and don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine is helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer.
And welcome back, everybody, to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolf-Manerick.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. This hour, we're getting tips about saving for a secure retirement and looking at how the evolving roles played by individuals, employers, and the government have led to this moment. And our guests are Michelle Singletary, a personal finance columnist for The Washington Post, and Jamie Hopkins, CEO of Bryn Mawr Trust Advisors. He's the co-author of the new book, Your Retirement Sketchbook, 125 Retirement Planning Lessons from Financial Experts.
We're asking you, do you have a plan for retirement? Are you anxious about retiring or saving for it? Email studio2@whyy.org. You can call 888-477-9499. If you're streaming on YouTube or Facebook, put your comment in the chat. And by the way, Al on YouTube asked us to describe what a K-shaped economy is. And I do want to take a second for this because this term has come up on several shows recently.
Yeah.
I mean, my basic understanding, Jamie, is it just means like, the people doing well are doing better and better, and the people who are doing worse and worse, and they're kind of diverging like the mouth of a K. Is that about it?
Yeah. So think about a capital K, and you got one line going down off that starting line and one going up.
Yeah.
And that starting point was where they both connected to that vertical line.
Yeah.
And we've got a group of people who are doing very well. They've made a lot of money, right? They're making a lot of money today.
Stock market's good.
They have investable assets and they're well employed. And then you've got another group that is feeling the pressures of inflation, feeling these cost of living changes out there, and their assets are dwindling down. They're taking on more debt and their jobs are being displaced.
There you go. Yeah, K-shaped so economy. K-shaped. That was a great explainer.
Yeah,
thank
I
you.
Love it. Thank you. Let's bring in another caller. We have Sherry from Millville on the line. Sherry, you're on Studio 2. What do you want to say about retirement?
Well, I just retired from the Federal Bureau of Prisons about 9 months ago, and they force you out at 57. I mean, like even the warden, like every Federal Bureau of Prisons employee is forced out. And they have a good thrift savers plan. They match you 5%. So over 23 years, I put in 5% and was matched 5%. I now rolled my thrift savers plan into a retirement account, you know. But so I have good money. But the pension isn't that great. My husband's been out of work for a year, and I'm not eligible for Social Security yet. So it's like I don't want to dip into my life savings to take a trip to Boston. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but that's where I'm at. We're just making the bills.
Yeah.
And I did all the right steps, and I, you know.
Yeah. And the things, some things happen. That's Sherry from Millville. Thank you so much, Sherry.
Thank you for sharing
story. Michelle, just your reaction to that. And then, you know, I wanted to sort of walk through because people at different stages of life, I mean, I feel like, you know, the way you look at it, retirement when you're young is different from the way you would look at it if you were 57 and kind of forced to retire. So your reaction to Sherry, but then just sort of like how your perception of retirement changes depending on where you are, you know, in your life point.
I think if you're younger, listen to these conversations. I have three young adult children, two in their 20s and one who will turn 31 this year. And so my husband and I have been pressing upon them to save as much as they can. They actually, the girls stayed home and saved almost all of their paycheck before they bought a home together. So, you know, I would just encourage older adults to just, you know, have these conversations with them and say, I know this seems so far in the future, but you got to think about this stuff now, and your older self will thank you. And I think Sherry and Susan have just, and a lot of the callers have proven what Jamie and I have talked about. You've got to stress test your plans and account for not just being laid off, but not being well enough to work.
Yeah.
Lots of people feel like they'll keep working to work themselves out of a problem, or maybe they've got a lot of debt and they say, I'll just keep working, and then they can't work. And so just all along the way, and then, and this is I'm going to try to say this in a way that doesn't offend anybody, but you know, you got to say, okay, this is what life gave me and I got to deal with it. So Sherry, maybe you can't go to Boston, but you can walk around in the neighborhood where you are. You can still have a good life. So if life does what life does, which throws curveballs at you, you know, you have to be able to say, okay, this is what happened to me. Yeah. And you have to be able to pivot. And that might take some therapy, some mental health work, so that you can adjust. Because if I could send you a ticket to Boston right now, I would. Don't call me though, because I'm not going to do it. But we have, that has to be part of your retirement plan as well. To sort of deal with when life, you know, maybe the children that you thought were going to take care of you, they die before you, or your parents live way longer than you want them to. I mean, you love your parents, but you know, they live until 100, you know? And so you've got to be able to roll with the punches, is what they say. And that's a hard thing for us to take, right?
Yeah.
And going back to Susan and her relationship with her husband and divorce, one of the things that we don't sort of bake into these plans is getting help, getting marriage counseling. You know, my church has a great marriage program where we are trying to make sure people have healthy marriages so that when we get to these senior years, you are not divorcing and having to split up all this this money that you've saved together. Now, I'm not saying that what might have been the case with Susan and them, but you got to work on your relationships. You got to work on the relationship with your spouse. You got to work with the relationship with your kids, because they're the ones who are going to be taking care of you. And so if you're all funky with them and you don't like their spouse, well, guess what? Their spouse is going to be the one that says yay or nay about taking care of you or changing your adult diapers. So we have to put that as part of this discussion.
Michelle, keep it at 100 right now.
I'm just saying, right?
It's comprehensive.
I'm just saying. Yeah. So I'm making sure that I'm nice to my kids now. I give them some money.
You better work it out with that daughter-in-law.
You better work it out with that daughter-in-law. Because, you know, I'm not saying most of the caregivers are women. And so if you don't like his wife, you're not going to be at their home. So this is a real part of the retirement planning picture, because life will happen. And even if you got all the money, who's going to help watch over you if you have alienated everybody in your life?
Interesting.
So if you're married and you're having trouble, please seek counseling. See if you can save that marriage. Because I'm telling you now, I like that blues song, it's cheaper to keep. But my husband not going nowhere.
All right, let me get in a couple more comments. So Gwen says, let's get to the anxiety part of this conversation.
Yes.
Gwen says, it feels like the economy is about to go south. We may be on the verge of a recession. And then even people who have 401ks may be in trouble. Let's bookmark that comment and bring in a caller. This is Carmen from Orland, Pennsylvania, who's on the line. Hey, Carmen, I'm curious for your perspective on retirement.
Hi, so I'm an elder millennial. I have 3 little kids, but I'm self-employed. And I'm so grateful that my parents are healthy and have their own retirement plans well in place. Knock on wood, everything goes smoothly. But I was just so heartened to hear your speaker kind of validate. Like, if you're in the thick of things, as we are right now, I am married, then you may not have had time to plan, but you're going to have to. And at this point, as a self-employed person, I feel like I'm throwing spaghetti at the walls. I have auto drafts to a couple, like a Roth IRA and a non-Roth IRA and a traditional this and a traditional that, but I haven't really thought formal direction, which is probably my next step in terms of planning.
Yeah, this is a great call. Thank you, Carmen. Because if you are in the thick of it, Jamie, as Carmen puts it, and you don't have an employer plan, so you're the one that has to figure this out. There's nothing auto happening in your life. It is difficult to figure out where to start. And as you mentioned, there are all these different types of products to pick from, and you don't know if you're picking the right one. Is it fair to look at it and say, well, they're all kind of basically the same, so just pick one? Or do you have to be more diligent than that? How do you get started when you're looking at this big supermarket shelf of retirement vessels?
Yeah, so I very much resonate with that one, because I am married. I have 3 kids. I'm a geriatric millennial now, too. I think they call
it. It's all right.
Wear it with pride.
Yeah. I was a business owner. I ran my own consulting firm at one point, too, before I came here. And you know, I had a lot of those same things. Like, what are you prioritizing? So that's a little bit of what's going on there. Like, it's okay to tell yourself, I'm just prioritizing growing the business because that's your income. That's how you're taking care of the kids. To your point, though, certain things are very similar. So, like, what company you have your IRA at, in all honesty, doesn't matter a whole lot. Like, the IRA is a legal structure. It's not very different. Now, what you buy inside of that is very different, right? If you're buying an annuity out there or you're investing in some target date fund, very low cost, Vanguard or somewhere else to grow your investments, that's really where, you know, whatever you want to say, the rubber meets the road. But that's where the details matter, not so much which one you're using. There's some tax benefits.
Which is confusing because the companies sometimes try to play up the differences in their sales pitches for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But then you're like, wait, so is Vanguard is worse than Lincoln, better than Fidelity? Yeah. You're like, wait, what are you guys talking about? You're
saying,
don't get hung up on that.
That's not the thing to be hung up on. Yeah. I mean, if you're saving in something today and you have the opportunity to move out of it, meaning your liquid investments, you're probably doing a good job overall. Now, I think the other part of that, though, is are you not just thinking about retirement, but should you be doing kids' college funding 529 before you save for your own retirement? That's a really interesting debate and conversation. But if you have three kids, that's a consideration. And I think the caller was Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania's 529 plan is a good plan. And there's some state tax benefits to that one. And you can get tax deferred growth. And so you have to balance all those things. It's just part of life. It sounded like her next step is doing more concentrated planning, probably to know, are we putting it in the most optimal places? And that is a good next step. But I think first shout out's just, you're doing a great job. Three kids, still married, saving somewhere.
Yeah.
That's a good place to be.
Yeah, keep it together. It's cheaper to keep them. Keep it together. I got to ask a couple questions. Angie says, Rob on YouTube says, I have enough saved that I could stop contributing today and still retire, but I still have 20 years to maintain employment while AI reshapes the economy. Mm. DTM H on YouTube says, do we need to also have multiple streams of income? And Angie says, multiple streams of residual income, stocks, real estate investments, everyone should have a plan B, C, and D. Mm. And so Michelle wanted to sort of give people some advice, because if you just open your eyes today and you're hearing this and you're like, dang, I hadn't really done anything. What's step one? Should you be paying down debt? Should you be making the savings? Should you be doing both? What should be your steps if you really don't have a ton and you maybe you have a 15-year, 20-year runway, but what should you be doing to sort of maximize that time? And does it change the closer you get to retirement date?
Yeah, I like that you threw in debt, because you all know how much I hate debt.
Yeah.
And I joke that if debt was a person, I'd slap it. just think of debt as the devil, because that is a drain on your income. And so as much as possible, stay out of debt. Don't get in debt. If you got kids, you know, I don't think it's an either or retirement or the college fund. If you think they're going to go to college, and we know that most will have to for the job situation that we have in this country, that you ought to try to be figuring out how to put some money aside. If you don't have enough, then you begin to have conversations when your kids are old enough to say, hey, listen, baby, we only got this amount of money. So you're not going to go to a school that costs $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year. You're going to either go to community college for 2 years, then transfer to the four university, and you're going to live at home. That's the situation that we're in, baby. I wish it was different. I wish you could have that idyllic, you know, college, you know, experience, but that's not our situation. So you have those conversations. So stay out of debt as much as possible. We know, for example, when you buy your home, people don't have cash for a home, but then you make sure you buy a home that is reasonably for your income. And so, you know, the bank will qualify you on your gross income, but we don't bring our own gross income. So when our two children, our daughters bought a home, we qualified them ourselves. We said, we looked at their income. We figured 30% of your net pay, that's all you should be paying, net, not gross. And that's the house limit that you're going to look for. And they took us we went with them on every single tour and looked at everything and helped them. And I love it that when they sat down with the lender, they were like, oh, you got any credit card debt? And they were like, you clearly don't know who my mama is. And you know, do you have a car note? No, they don't have a car note, because they're still, the 31-year-old is still driving the car that she had when we bought her with cash at 16. So those are the kinds of things that you put into place to make all of this work.
Yeah.
And so stay out of debt, save as much as you can, as often as you can, and really try to live within your means. So, yeah. You know, a lot of people's budget is eating out and those kinds of things. And then there's some things you're just not going to be able to control. You're not going to be control if you lose your job. You're not going to be able to control if one of you gets sick or both of you get sick or your kids get sick. And so you have to be able to, and we've been talking about this whole show about having plan A, B, C, D, and E. And I'm telling you this, I know I've been harping on this, but if life is hard for you, please get some mental health counseling. Mm. Someone who can help you walk through all the stuff in life that happens so that you can pivot. And while you're you can reduce the amount of stress as you pivot to a different plan.
And Susan, by the way, echoing some of that, saying be financially responsible from the start. Don't live beyond your means. Don't eat out, etc. We bought a home we could afford, paid it off in 15 years.
Right.
Real quick closing thoughts, Jamie, on the stock market and having a lot of your money invested in the stock market. And if there is a way to diversify, should you? Because the stock market has been very good to a lot of people.
Yeah, the stock market, talking about investing, diversification is a great thing. And that means within what we call asset classes. So not just being NVIDIA today, because it's become such a big part of the market. It's done great. But you should, if you're thinking about retirement, make sure that your assets are as diversified as possible from an investment standpoint. But that also means across what we will say is asset classes. So whether it's bonds or CDs or safer, less volatile in income or investment sources. But the other part about this is the market does well over long periods of time. And this is the challenge for retirees, is that when you're 1 year into retirement, you're not thinking about the long period all the time.
You're thinking about today.
It's today. And so what we call that in the industry is called sequence of returns risk. And really bad market returns early in retirement can devastate a retirement because you're taking money out, market's dropping. So often those first couple of years, you want to be a little bit safer in your investments.
Makes sense. That's Jamie Hopkins, CEO of Bryn Mawr Trust Advisors. Jamie, thank you so much for your time today on Studio 2. And thank you, Michelle Singletary, personal finance columnist for The Washington Post. We really enjoyed it, guys.
Thank you.
And sorry, Marianne from Philadelphia, we didn't get to you. Hopefully you'll listen again and call in again. Thank you to everybody who called in and wrote in. And of course, we couldn't do this without our producers, Debbie Builder, Andreas Copes, and Hazel Mae Bryan. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. From Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
Stay calm and carry on. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We'll talk to you tomorrow.